following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Friday. Oh my goodness, it's the final Friday before voting ends in the 2020 elections. You know, I'm Nicole Sandler. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. I have been going down a trip down memory lane the last few days for a number of different reasons. First of all, our guest on today's program is a man named Billy Corbin. He is a Florida native, and he is a film director, and he's produced and directed a number of documentaries, most of them centering on Florida, as I tend to call it. His brand new film that is now playing on HBO is called 537 Votes. Now, if that sounds familiar, well, just rewind about 20 years, because in the 2000 election, now you remember, right? It all came down to 537 votes in Florida. That's ostensibly how much George Bush won by, except he didn't win at all. He lost the popular vote. And, you know, his brother Heb was governor of Florida at the time. And all the wheels of the corrupt Republicans worked together to ensure that George W. Bush would win that election again, even though he lost the popular vote, even though if the Supreme Court had allowed Florida to continue counting, to actually count every vote, what a concept. Well, in that case, perhaps things would be so different now. Can you imagine if Al Gore had won? Now, I'm not the biggest Al Gore fan, but you put him next to George W. Bush, and it's a no-brainer. You know, during the Bush years, I thought they don't get a whole lot stupider. I even put together at the end of his term a Bushisms A to Z production piece, and it went on probably for 20 to 25 minutes. Every letter of the alphabet, I could find a Bushism just showing his stupidity. But, you know, we've learned there is no bottom when it comes to the Republican Party, because now we have Donald Trump. So I've been in a sort of rewind mode, because for the last few days I've been watching this film, 537 Votes. And I'm one of those weird people. I fall asleep in front of the TV. So it took me a few days, but we finished it last night, and so many memories. 20 years ago, and please don't let history repeat. That's one of my biggest fears right now, is that, like the song goes, it's all just a little bit of history repeating. We cannot let that happen. And in fact, I decided I was going to go back through some of the old shows from that week. The day after, November 9th, 2016, I was a bit shell-shocked, I think. So I went a couple of days ahead, and I looked at a show from the 11th. It was Friday of that week. It was 2 days, 3 days after Election Day. And the title, you know, I give my show a title each day, and the title that day was Scorched Earth Meltdown. And just to give you an example of how I was feeling that day, I'm just here at 19 minutes into the show. Let's see what was going on. And to have people tell me, you know, the worst part of it were people, like-minded people, who said, I'm not devastated by Trump because Hillary got what's coming to her. Again, I lost my mother when I was 19, but one of the things she used to say to me just goes ringing through my head constantly, more these days than ever before, and it's, don't cut off your nose to spite your face.
She did say that.
Well, all of you so-called Bernie supporters who voted for Donald Trump, and even worse, you Bernie supporters who couldn't, you know, put aside your hatred for Hillary Clinton to put down
absolute evil in Donald Trump. This is on you. It's okay. on you.
Well, so I was angry. In fact, I was going through the five stages of grief. What was it? Bargaining, anger, depression, something, acceptance. And I went through all of them. And you know, look, if you've been listening for a while, you know that I suffer from depression. And I did not, I honestly didn't think I'd make it to this point. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't have any, you know, ideas of how, what would happen for me not to make it. And it wasn't only me. I was afraid we weren't going to make it. And in many cases, we haven't. This nation is in, oh my God, what a crisis. Like I haven't seen in my lifetime. And again, I turned 61 in a few days. I just don't want history to repeat itself here. So that's another, and we'll get into that. We'll go with that theme. When we talk with Billy Corbin later in the hour, because again, we don't want the events of 20 years ago to happen again. All right. So that's part of my, you know, my journey through the past in my mind over the last few days. Then, I got it last night. You know, this is totally off subject. It's a non sequitur, but it's part of my life. Back for, between 1990 and 1994, I was living in Los Angeles. And during those years, I produced a morning show in Los Angeles, a fun morning radio show. It was the Mark and Brian radio show. It was based at KLOS, a big rock station in LA. And while I was there, the show became syndicated. So we were on in something like 15 to 20 markets or thereabouts. Well, yesterday, Mark and Brian were inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame, and it's a big deal. And actually, I'm going to pat myself on the back here for a second because no one else is going to do it, so I get to do it. The day that they were, it was announced that they got in, the way I found out was an email that I got early that morning from a man named Jim Kerr. Now, those of you who live in New York or ever lived in New York might recognize that name, Jim Kerr. It does still does morning radio in New York. He's on Q104 right now. But back in the day, he did mornings on WPLJ, which, by the way, doesn't even exist anymore. It's now a religious Christian station, The Way. Ooh. Anyway, I worked with Jim. I was his producer at WPLJ from 1985 to 87. I told you I'm old. And Jim, a few years ago, was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. And so when this was announced a few months ago, I learned about it by opening an email that morning from Jim Kerr saying, you probably have the distinction of being the only person in the country who has produced two Radio Hall of Fame award-winning shows. So, yeah, so I'll take credit for that. I'm not in myself. I'm always, you know, I'm always the sidekick. I'm always the producer, the second string player. But you know what? That's okay. It really is okay. I've been able to do some incredible things. And so yesterday, they streamed the ceremony live. It was all done virtually, obviously, because we're still in COVID country. And so I got to hear a little bit, you know, Mark and Brian did a little hour-long show together. They played some best of bits. They talked, and then they accepted their award. And so when, you know, when that stuff happens, I get in that pensive mode, that kind of thinking back over the years. The other thing in watching this movie, 537 Votes, which was 20 years ago. Now, my time with Mark and Brian was even 10 years before that. And in fact, next month, I'll share with you something that happened 30 years ago when we went to Saudi Arabia to do a broadcast on the eve of the first Gulf War. Seriously. I know it was a goofy morning show, but we did some pretty special stuff. Anyway, I'm all over the place. I know, because that's where I am. And that's where so many of us are. I can't even begin to tell you how many people that I've spoken with, either over the phone, and well, I haven't spoken to anybody in person, over email, over the phone, online. Everybody is all stressed. We're all stressed because everything is on the line next week. And to make matters worse, we're not going to know, you know, the answers. I'm going to wake up on my birthday on Wednesday, and we probably won't have a winner. By the way, I do have some guests lined up for next week. The day before, on Monday, Digby will be here. We'll sort of do a roundup of let's put this behind us and move forward beginning tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, on November 4th, the morning after, actually the afternoon after, Thomas Frank will be here, who's always one of my favorite guests and certainly one of my favorite authors. So, well, we have the election covered in that vein. But again, I'm watching this movie last night, 537 votes, and remembering I grew up here in South Florida, but in 2000, I wasn't living here. I was living in California, still doing radio out there, though no longer with Mark and Brian, but I was still out in LA. But I'm looking at the dates. So election day in 2000 was, I can't remember. I don't remember, honestly. But I do know that when all the fights with the Supreme Court and beyond were happening, the days that flashed on the screen as I'm watching the movie coincided with my trip to Kazakhstan to adopt my daughter. So I flew out of Miami. No, I'm sorry. I flew out of LAX on November 18th, got to Kazakhstan on the 19th. I flew through Germany. It was a long, long couple of flights. And on November 19th and November 20th, I got to go to the orphanage and meet my daughter for the first time. So we had an apartment in the town of Almaty, Kazakhstan, and I had to stay there for about 3 weeks going through the process of the adoption, and then there's a waiting period. And the only English language television station, not only the only English language news station, but the only English language television station was Fox. I kid you not. Fox, not news, international. And so it was under that umbrella that I got all my coverage of what was going on with the elections then. So again, as I said, I've been going back and forth, and you know, it's like every decade there's something else, and it seems like the years, this the 2000, 1980, 2000, and 2020 have all been pretty fucked up. Yeah. So anyway, you know. There's other drama going on in the world, in the progressive world. Glenn Greenwald announced he's resigning from The Intercept, and I stuck my nose in where it didn't belong the other day. I'm just not a fan of Glenn Greenwald's because I believe he's sold out and has, anybody who goes on Tucker Carlson's show night after night, I have a problem with. I don't even know why I brought that up, but it just, you know, nothing ever happens in a vacuum. When we're going through this crazy election cycle, there's a million other things also going on in our lives. The foreclosure crisis here in Florida, people are being evicted. I just saw one state, let me see if I can find it in my notes. One state, and I should give them props for it, North Carolina. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper signed an executive order on Wednesday that will suspend all evictions in the state for thousands of renters who are out of work because of the virus. So more than 300,000 people in North Carolina are unable to pay rent. And so this order suspending evictions goes through the end of 2020. But for instance, here in Florida, where I live, and we have Governor Death Sentence, he lifted the eviction moratorium on October 1st. We are going to have such a crisis, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden who wins this election, and everything in me believes it will be Joe Biden. There is a groundswell, not necessarily of support for Biden, but of a wave against Donald Trump, because everything about him is vile. Everything about him is the opposite of righteous and honest and, all the things that you would expect from a president. It doesn't always happen, but that you would want, qualities you'd want in your president, are not in this man. vile is probably the most descriptive term I could use to come up with him, but there are many others. And maybe before Monday, I will assemble a list and maybe we can add to it. But again, something else that happened in the last week or so is Bruce Springsteen released a new album. I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan. In case you didn't know, I mean, for those of you who watch on YouTube or Facebook or anything, you know, I've got a bunch of pictures and stuff behind me in the studio. And the one directly behind me, let's see, that one that I'm pointing at right now, that is Bruce Springsteen. It's the only picture I have with him. It was taken at the MTV Unplugged taping that he wound up plugging in for. It was the Human Touch and Lucky Town tour. And so, you know, I'm a huge Springsteen fan. And this new album also comes with a companion documentary that I fell asleep to watching the other night, because that's what I do. Anyway, Bruce Springsteen, there's a Springsteen channel on Sirius XM and he does a radio show. And, you know, he's somewhat political in his music, but he doesn't often come out and just state clearly what he's thinking. You know, he's a poet and he makes people think. Well, this time, Bruce was more than forthcoming about this election. Here's what he had to say. He's coming, I promise.
There's no art in this White House.
No.
There's no literature. No poetry, no music. There are no pets in this White House.
Mm.
No loyal man's best friend. No socks the family cat. No kids' science fairs. No time when the president takes off his blue suit, red tie uniform, and becomes human.
Right.
Except when he puts on his white shirt and khaki pants uniform.
Yeah.
And hides from the American people to play golf. There are no images of the first family enjoying themselves together in a moment of relaxation. No Obamas on the beach in Hawaii moments.
Nope.
Or Bushes fishing in Kennebunkport. No Reagans on horseback. No Kennedys playing touch football on the Cape. Where'd that country go? Where did all the fun, the joy, and the expression of love and happiness go?
Good question.
We used to be the country that did the ice bucket challenge and raised millions for charity. We used to have a president who calmed and soothed the nation instead of dividing it. And a first lady who planted a garden instead of ripping one out.
Yeah, no kidding.
We are rudderless and joyless. We have lost the cultural aspects of society that make America great.
Huh.
We have lost our mojo, our fun, our happiness, our cheering on of others, the shared experience of humanity that makes it all worth it. The challenges and the triumphs that we shared and celebrated, the unique can-do spirit that America has always been known for.
Mm-hmm.
We are lost.
We are.
We've lost so much in so short a time. On November 3rd, vote them out.
Yes. Vote them out. Bruce Springsteen. Speaking on his radio show on Sirius XM from his home studio. He's been doing a few interviews in the last week or so because he's got this new album, Letter to You, I think it's called. And boy, it's good. I'm only like really one listen through, but it got me to get my trial subscription to Apple Plus TV because that's the only place you can see it. But yeah, we need those words, from not only Bruce, but everybody. Somebody, Kush Kant in the chat room, said, can we have those words? Please post. I'll tell you what, I will somehow post that clip on the blog today, along with the rest of my stuff, at NicoleSandler.com. We're down to the wire. we have this weekend. There's still early voting going on. Again, I'm not out and about. I'm not seeing it because I don't leave my house, because it's another sign of the times. Because this president, this resident of the Oval Office, has totally not only mishandled and mismanaged this pandemic, he has made it worse. He's made it worse by pretending it's not there. He just thinks if he, you know, acts like it's not there, it's going to go away. In fact, he said that to you, it'll just go away. But it doesn't just go away. In fact, 200 and almost 30,000 Americans have died. And they're predicting, with the spikes that are happening now, that by January, that could double. By January! And Donald Trump continues to go out and do these events, don't wear masks, no social distancing. He puts on super spreader events, and he doesn't give a shit about you. He doesn't give a shit whether or not you die. All he cares about is, you know, that he didn't. So if you were listening on Tuesday, you know, Gotta Laugh is here every Tuesday. And this past Tuesday, there was a Lincoln Project ad that she had seen. And she said, oh, my God, it's so powerful. You got to see it. And I went looking for it, couldn't find it. Well, we got it now. And this goes to exactly what I was just talking about. The suffering under this pandemic, how, you know, the death toll, the suffering, the staying apart is just horrendous. We watched the one ad, the one that I thought she was asking about, showed two adult children calling their parent who was in the hospital and dying, and they couldn't be there with their dying parent. That's the one that I thought she was talking about that I played. The one that she was talking about that I found might be even more devastating. And for those of you listening and not watching, let me set it up for you. The shot opens and we see, you know, kids' trophies. And the door opens to a bedroom and the mother walks in to see her son sleeping on the bed. And the son can't be more than 8 years old. And we'll take it from there. Here we go. There are the trophies. Here comes mom in the room. And the little boy is sleeping. Mom wakes him up.
Hey, mommy. You asked me to wake you and tell you what happened in the election.
Who won?
Trump.
Ugh.
Trump won.
But I thought you could only be president two times.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. And the crowd is chanting 12 more years. The on the chyron it says stop him or it will never stop. Vote him out. And that's what we must do. When she said Trump, my stomach dropped. I remember that feeling last time so well, isn't the word, so horribly. I remember the moment when it was apparent that that was it, that Donald fucking Trump was going to be president. And just nothing seemed right anymore. But to hear this little boy say, I thought you couldn't be president for more than 8 years. And the mom says, not anymore. And then you hear the crowd chanting 12 more years, 12 more years. Everything this man does has been an assault on democracy, has been an assault on what we know, has been assault on everything that's good. And that's what I wanted to leave you with before the weekend. If you haven't yet voted, vote. You know, tomorrow's Halloween. And things can get awfully scary. They already are. We'll be right back.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars. Man trying to enter an office building on 4th and Main with no mask. Repeat, no mask.
I woke into my my job late last week when my co-workers all began to freak. They started cursing and began to shout and said quite rudely as the boss threw me out.
You need a mask.
I need a COVID mask.
A COVID mask.
It seemed a lot to ask.
To wear a mask.
To do a simple task.
Put on a mask.
I need a COVID mask. Made it mandatory almost every place. That we can't be seen unless we hide our face. I can't even leave my humble abode without something covering my mouth and nose.
We need a mask.
We need a COVID mask.
A COVID mask.
It seems a lot to ask.
To wear a mask.
Can't even mow my grass.
Without a mask.
Without a COVID mask. This mask wearing isn't fun. And the snitching has now begun. My neighbor called the hotline, 'cause my dog wasn't wearing one.
Ooh.
Walking through the mall, a woman's voice did ring. Seems she was troubled by just one thing. She pointed to the door, shook her fist and said,
"What are you trying to do, you jerk? Make everybody sick?"
Forgot his mask.
Forgot my COVID mask.
His COVID mask.
Nobody gets a pass.
That stupid mask.
Can't even pump my gas.
Without a mask.
Without a COVID mask. Honey, I'm home.
What do you want?
I need to come in and get my mask.
Don't let Daddy in the house, Mommy. He's been wearing his mask.
No mask, no entry. Sorry.
But honey.
You should have taken it with you.
COVID mask. Don't forget, if you're going to go out trick-or-treating, your COVID mask. But don't trick-or-treat. Skip Halloween this year. Have a private party, all right? Okay, if all goes well, Billy Corbin, the director of the movie 537 Votes, will be joining us in just about 5 minutes or 3 minutes or something like that. So, you know, let me take 2 minutes and play for you the trailer of the new film that's currently running on HBO called 537 Votes. I promise you it's going to take you down memory lane and not necessarily in a good way. Here it is.
The 2000 election was a street brawl for the presidency of the United States.
We have a dispute about who is to be the next president. Both campaigns knew it was coming down to Florida.
This is going to be a total shit show.
About 6:40 this morning, a 5-year-old child came ashore.
Elian Gonzalez was used for political purposes. Cuban Americans thought that he should stay.
Democrats wanted Elian taken back.
But when Elian was returned to Cuba,
there was a price to be paid.
They can stop Al Gore from becoming president. Bush was handed this plate of voters.
All of a sudden, there are problems. It's too close to call.
This triggers an automatic recount.
The rules were changing minute by minute.
You had dimpled chads and hanging chads and pregnant chads.
It was so farcical.
Yeah. Al Gore won the state of Florida, but Miami made sure that at least 10,000 ballots never saw the light of day.
The election was lost in many different places, but it was stolen in Miami.
While Democrats wanted to do the right thing, Republicans wanted the win.
Stop the count! Stop the fraud!
And the recount was stopped.
It was run with evil intent. And it worked.
Please give me a fucking break. Politics is about winning.
What happened in Miami changed this country forever.
You need to take the time to vote.
Yes, you need to take the time to vote. So that was the trailer for the film 537 Votes. And, you know, when I use Zoom, which is what I use for a lot of the guests these days so we can get them up on video, I'm kind of at their mercy. In the olden days, I used to, you know, I'd call them. Now I have to wait until they enter the room. So hopefully Billy Corbin will be joining us shortly. In case you're wondering a little more about Billy Corbin, he's from Florida and he's produced and directed a number of movies. His films tend to focus on this very strange peninsula that is so often the butt of jokes. His credits include, and you may remember some of these, Raw Deal, A Question of Consent. That was his first film when he was just very young. And it looked at the alleged rape of an exotic dancer at a University of Florida frat house. He moved on to Scarface territory with the movie Cocaine Cowboys, which is probably what he's most known for. Again, centering on Miami's, drug issue back in the, I think that was in the 80s. I want to, but forget me with dates. I don't know. Then he did, did a documentary on University of Miami Hurricanes college football with, called The U. It was part of ESPN's 30 by 30 series, which I know David, my husband, is a big fan of. In 2011, Billy Corbin produced or directed the movie Square Grouper, The Godfathers of Ganja. And it was all about pot smuggling in South Florida back in the 70s. And it featured my friend and somebody that you've seen on this program before, Robert Platschorn. Hold on. I see Billy's with us, and I just have to get his picture up on my screen so I can bring him into the conversation. But let me finish introducing him. This is the problem when I do everything myself. And then there's more. And that brings us up to where we are now, which is the new film, 537 Votes. It is playing right now on HBO and HBO Max. Billy Corbin, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I grew up here in South Florida as well, except during the period of the 2000 election, I was actually out in Los Angeles. And even more, it's so weird, while I'm watching the film and you have all the dates up there, those dates coincided with my trip to Kazakhstan to adopt my daughter. So on November 19th, I was flying over there. On November 20th, I was meeting her. On December 12th, when Al Gore finally conceded, I was in an airport in Moscow wanting the Moscow Times to be published before I had to get on the plane and fly home to have that as a souvenir copy. And the best I was able to come up with was like the International Times or something like that. But I do have it. Your memories of that era are a bit more focused here on South Florida. My family was still here. Obviously, I watched it going, yeah, that's Florida. But I didn't live it as closely as you did. So, I guess this is the perfect time to come out with a film like 537 Votes. Was there a point you wanted to make with it?
Well, yes. First, no, it was not a coincidence. And second, right. And second, yes, there was most certainly a point that we were trying to make with it. And we had gotten the idea for it actually late last summer. My producing partners and I were sitting around the office in Miami Beach, trying to determine what we might do for the election. We felt that Americans had an affirmative obligation to be more involved in the political process, more so than perhaps ever before. We understood the gravity of the moment. I think it's sometimes difficult to determine when you are living history, you know, hard to see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
And this is one of those moments. And so we thought, well, we should do a project. And what project will we do? And we realized it was the 20th anniversary of the 2000 Florida recount. And so, you know, there's a saying from a T.D. Allman book, Miami City of the Future, that theorizes that the Miami of today is the America of tomorrow, that we are the canary in the coal mine. Okay. We're America's bellwether. And if you want to know what challenges we'll face or calamities may befall us in the years or even decades to come, you need only look at South Florida. And so, long story even longer, when I say the Miami of today is the America of tomorrow, I'm usually talking about 1980
mm-hmm.
and 2000.
Okay.
And intriguingly, we're now 20 year,
right.
another 20-year interval on from that. And so we were curious to kind of, in terms of what we remembered contemporaneously, it was my second election that I ever voted in. For my producing partners, it was their first.
Wow.
And we were wondering what people remembered, what they didn't remember. And we really thought there was a lot of lessons to be gleaned from this particular election 20 years ago, in the cycle that we're in right now?
Well, the biggest lesson that I think everyone has at the top of their minds is close elections can be stolen. And in fact, that I believe is the last line or something similar to it in the film. Close elections can be stolen. They don't get much closer than this because to refresh people's minds, and I played the trailer a few minutes ago, but it all came down to Florida, as I call it, Florida. And, you know, and the film, there's a lot of stuff there. There was so much happening at the time. You spend a lot of time on the Ilhan Gonzalez story. Some might say that really didn't have any bearing on the election. I mean, it came down to the Supreme Court. It was Sandra Day O'Connor. But you're saying that the episode with Ilhan Gonzalez, which captivated, which just ran this part of the country during that time, turned Cuban American sentiments so horribly against the Democrats that they would vote for anybody as long as it wasn't a Democrat?
Well, there's another great line towards the end of the documentary is that the election was for the Democrats was lost in many places, but it was stolen in Miami. Okay. So we decided to do a year in the life of Miami. And one of the things you discover, and I think it's happening in the news cycle as we speak, is the importance of the Cuban American voting bloc in Miami. And let's be real. When an election comes down to 537 votes, okay? There's 67 counties in Florida. That's less than 10 votes per county, okay? Every vote matters, obviously. And when you see that Bill Clinton and Al Gore in 1996 received between 35 and 40% of the Cuban American vote.
Okay.
And then 4 years later, Al Gore at the top of the ticket with Joe Lieberman received between 12 and 18% of the Cuban American vote. And George W. Bush received 50,000 more Cuban American votes than Bob Dole, the Republican nominee, did in 1996. I think you can see how important the votes are. And listen, Miami-Dade County went blue, as it almost always does. But there are no electoral college votes in Miami-Dade County.
Exactly.
You have to earn them. You have to earn them from the state of Florida. And so what's important, though, in Miami-Dade County is what that margin of victory will be for the Democrats in order to by the way, especially when the margin's 537, it can definitely sway the outcome of an election. And we all know in Florida, statewide national elections are determined in the margins. They are like UM-FSU football games. It doesn't matter how lopsided the matchup is or what the outcome is that's predicted, it all comes down to a field goal.
Okay. Sports analogy for everything. But so here we are. And what's astounding to me is how many of the same players are still in the game. Much to my dismay and horror, you feature Roger Stone a lot in the film. He's willing to talk. I did an interview with Roger Stone a couple of years ago. I was surprised he picked up the phone, but he did, and it was contentious as I thought it would be. He's just an asshole. But obviously he cooperated with you, but we don't even know if what he was telling was the truth. Was he in that RV calling the shots for the Brooks Brothers riot, or did he have nothing to do with it? Do we know?
No, we'll probably never know. I mean, I believe that he was certainly down here in Miami around that time. His wife, who is Cuban-American, she was making the rounds on Spanish language radio with a lot of the demagoguery and propaganda and bullshit rhetoric about a stolen election. As Anne-Louise Bardak says in the documentary, if I am going to steal an election, the first thing I'm going to do is accuse the other side of stealing the election, which is exactly what we heard. And a lot of nonsense about this is like a coup, like Fidel Castro.
Right.
Total bullshit. Because the position of the Democrats was simple. It was count every vote. Let the chips fall where they may. Let's legitimize this election. Let the American people know who we voted for, who was chosen, and then we will fall in line behind that person, whoever it is, and we'll move ahead with a peaceful transition of power. The Republican position was, as long as we're just barely in the lead, let's stop counting the votes. And that's what happened in Miami-Dade. When the recount was going ahead, Bush was only ahead by about 154 votes around that time. And so they needed to put a stop to it, because if Al Gore ever took the lead, even by one vote, it would change their BS narrative that somehow the Republicans had won and the Democrats were trying to steal it. That was not what was happening, but that PR campaign was really working for them. And exactly what role Roger played, I mean,
who knows? Who knows? He's like Trump. He takes credit for everything. We don't know exactly what his involvement is, but whenever there's Republican dirty tricks involved, Roger Stone is probably not too far away. So Billy Corbin, the whole state of Florida, though, was pretty screwed up, and all of them had, you know, a hand in giving George W. Bush the victory. Jeb Bush, his brother, was governor, and then you didn't spend a whole lot of time on Katherine Harris, but she played a pretty big role as well, just being batshit crazy and it being in the bag for the Republicans. When they want to fix it, they can. And what you mentioned of them saying it's classic projection, it's what Trump does every day. Things he's doing, he accuses the other side of doing. We weren't trying to steal the election. I'm talking like I'm them. The Democrats weren't trying to steal it. The Republicans were. The Democrats, as you said, were trying to count every vote.
Well, with Donald Trump, every accusation is a confession. I think we've come to learn that by now. It's very easy to know what he's up to. He's accusing somebody else of doing it. So there's that. But your point, everybody was in place. This isn't a conspiracy. I call it a conspiracy of convenience, where everybody is in their place. They see which side the bread is buttered on, and they know what they're instinctually what their role in the process is. They didn't all meet in a dark, smoky conference room to like say, this is what you're gonna do. Right. No, everybody was in place. You had the brother of the Republican nominee for president in the governor's office. Yep. The salient point about Katherine Harris, which we do make in the documentary, is that she was not only the Secretary of State, she was the co-chair of the George W. Bush campaign in the state of Florida.
Yep.
As you know, the Republicans have the Democrats never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. So the Republicans have had this strategy for decades and decades running. I mean, the Democrats have been a non-entity in Florida since basically 1999, since before the turn of the century. They have gerrymandered themselves into a legislative power, despite the fact that registered Democrats outnumber Republicans by many hundreds of thousands.
That's right.
In Miami-Dade County, we are the biggest, bluest county. And yet you look at our 34 municipalities and the Republic and the county government, almost all the mayors are Republican. Most of the commissioners and council members and village, you know, council members, depending on the makeup of the individual municipalities, are all Republicans. We have experienced not only minority rule, I would argue the tyranny of the minority in the state of Florida before it was a thing. The Miami of today is the America of tomorrow. That's what we're experiencing now, is the tyranny of the minority on a national scale.
Did you pay attention to politics in Florida before the 2000 election? And I'm asking because, as I said, I was out in L.A. In the 90s doing radio. When I came back here, as my daughter was starting kindergarten, I started working with Jim DeFede as his producer over at WINZ, but when it was a progressive talk station. And I would listen to his stories about the Banana Republic aspects of Miami, how Miami politics were the most crazy politics in the entire country. So what happened in 2000 wasn't necessarily unexpected.
Oh, I love Jim. You see so his cameo in the documentary with that new font,
whatever
that
is. The hair, the curls.
Like a Q-tip or something.
So I loved it.
Well, a Q-tip after it comes out of your ear, actually, is what it kind of looked like. But I love Jim.
So do I.
He's another of our documentaries that's coming out soon.
Really?
Yes, oh, he is. I can't talk about it yet, but he's in it.
Oh, good. I'm excited.
Yeah. But I was very involved in politics in so much that a young person could be. I wish I had gotten more involved in campaigns and on the ground kind of stuff, but I was very interested. I should say less involved, more interested would be actually more accurate. I turned 18 in the summer of 1996, which was a presidential election year. Mm. I was very excited to register to vote, which I was able to do in my AP English class in advance.
Nice.
In advance, so that when I turned 18 in July, they sent me they sent me my voter registration card, and I have voted in virtually every single election ever since, not just every 4 years, but every time there is a local referendum, I am a super voter in Miami-Dade County and proud of it. And so I vote whenever there's something to vote.
As you should.
Everyone.
Absolutely.
Should. If we vote, we win. If we vote, we
exactly.
win. It just, the numbers are just on our side. When it's an actual democratic election, by which I mean the Electoral College is not involved, gerrymandering is not involved. When you don't have the numbers demographically anymore, you have no choice but cheat. You have to rig the system when you cannot win a free and fair election. And I fear that's what we experienced in 2000.
Yep.
I know. And I fear that that's what we may be experiencing again in 2020.
Without a doubt. Now, so Billy Corbin is with us again. He's the director of the new film, 537 Votes. It's now playing on HBO, HBO Max. And so I'm watching it with my husband, who also grew up here in South Florida. And, you know, he lived it through this and we're watching it and, you know, he's going, it really, you know, there were two women, I think, who were responsible for this. And I said, all right, Catherine Harris, yes. And the second was Sandra Day O'Connor, who kept saying she was going to retire, but she didn't. And I guess she was the deciding vote who stopped the recount in mid-count. And the scene that you have there in the film is just, it's heartbreaking because they're counting, the Supreme Court ordered a recount, and then all of a sudden, stop. Just stop right now. Everybody hands up, walk away. The difference at that moment was 537 votes. And that was it.
Actually, the difference was 154 votes.
Okay.
So yeah, you might've sort of missed this detail. It happens in a day in the documentary, but let me say two things about that. First of all, certainly Sandra Day O'Connor was the swing vote, but let us not neglect, as I said before, all the players were in place for this heist.
Yep.
It isn't Ocean's 11 where again, they all conspired together, but all the players were in their place. The father of the Republican nominee. We already talked about his brother right. being the governor of the biggest and, as it turned out, most important swing state
yep.
in the country. But his father had previously been the president of the United
yes,
States, George H.W. Bush, who had appointed two of the Supreme Court justices who ultimately decided the case. Mind you, they split, but one of them, Clarence Thomas, was on the 5-4 on the on the majority side that decided the election. Now, the thing is that these were dominoes that fell. The first domino that fell was the Brooks Brothers riot in Miami. When Miami-Dade stopped the recount, it basically gave entree for everybody else to do likewise. And those dominoes went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But here's the important detail that gets lost, is that the Supreme Court did not simply side with the Republicans, that counting legitimate votes was somehow unconstitutional
okay.
or undemocratic. They actually chanted voter fraud. The Republican rioters, they chanted voter fraud. They were just counting votes. We used to call that democracy.
Yes.
Republicans call it voter fraud, apparently. Okay. So the U.S. Supreme Court, what they did was not only stop the recount, so stop the counting of ballots in a free and fair American election, but what they did was they actually threw hundreds of ballots in the trash can. And I say this because, as you've already said, Nicole, they were mid-recount at that
point. Yep.
And Dade County and Palm Beach County had already discovered over 300 additional votes for Al Gore during the recount. George Bush's lead was reduced to 154 wow. votes on or about December 8th or so, when the Florida Supreme Court found two things. They said, first, all the counties should continue their recounts.
Right.
And second, these newly counted votes should be tabulated in Catherine Harris's final certified margin and mm-hmm. tally. So what the Supreme Court did was not only say stop the recount, they said return the margin to Catherine Harris's first certified number or first certified margin of 537 1 month earlier, November 8th, the day after the elections,
right.
essentially negating all of the work and effort that people have been doing in the recount to date. And if you remember the movie Election with Matthew Broderick, when he discovers that Tracy Flick won by two votes
yes.
and takes the two ballots and he crumbles them up and then he throws them in the trash can. That's what the United States Supreme Court did with hundreds of votes for Al Gore in
wow.
Florida. And there's still, as we learned from the documentary, at least 10,750 so-called undervote or undercount ballots in Miami-Dade and countless others throughout the state that were never never counted.
Right. The dimple chads were never counted. And you explain in the film how that happened when the things, the pieces pop out of the little computer card. Once they filled up, there was no place for them to drop. So they became dimpled, even though the voter tried to push it through, and those were never counted. So, you know, there's automatic recounts when it's within a certain amount. This obviously falls within that. This was a travesty of justice, and I'm sorry, Al Gore was a fucking wimp. He should never have given, he should not have conceded. I'm still angry to this day because, and you even go into it in the film, where we would be today if George W. Bush had never occupied the Oval Office, if it was Al Gore. We wouldn't have invaded Iraq. 9/11 probably wouldn't have happened. We would deal with the environment. I mean, we'd be in such a different place. I don't think we'd be isolating at home right now. I wouldn't be afraid to leave my house. So everything turned on that. And here's what has me freaked out and so many of my listeners right now. Three people currently on the Supreme Court, John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, were all lawyers who worked on that case on behalf of George W. Bush.
Not a coincidence. I mean, that's all I can say. Everybody is, the players are in their place. The Republicans are playing the long game here. And the Democrats
always do.
Yeah, and the Democrats have been failing to catch up for decades now, more than 20 years now. They don't focus on down ballot races sufficiently. Yep. They do not focus on, when they have control of the totality of the government, focus on lifetime appointments to the federal judiciary. Their priorities are all out of whack. As I said, the Democrats never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And if 2000 is any indication, I think 20 years later, we know that Florida fuckery remains our single greatest export from this state. And it's a shame. I mean, it's a shame that I'll put it to you this way. Here's my metaphor for it. If and this is very much, I think, representative of, unfortunately, the last 4 years in this country, and that the Democrats perhaps have not learned the lessons of the 2000 Florida recount. If you are on the floor and your opponent is standing above you with one foot on your neck and the other foot they are kicking you repeatedly in the stomach, and you're on the floor waving the Constitution around, you are losing that argument.
Right.
And I that to me is sort of the metaphor that comes to mind when thinking of 2000 and unfortunately most of the last 20 years in terms of the dynamic between Republicans and Democrats.
Right. And you know, the projection again, Trump going out and saying, if the only way I could possibly lose is if they rig it, they fix it. Well, that's the only way he'll win. I call it opposite world, right? Where up is down and is out, nothing, everything's backwards. We're in opposite world. Everything Donald Trump says, it's the old I'm rubber, you're glue thing, right?
Why would any American president, I don't think people understand how extraordinarily damaging this is, why any American president would want to instill doubt in the outcome of an election is what it says for our reputation around the world, mm-hmm. to our allies, to our enemies, for that matter. The message being sent loud and clear is that we are no better than the third world banana republics that we have thumbed our nose at and treated like puppets for this country. I mean, it's really rather pathetic. But then this is a man who is still litigating the 2016 election that he won, for crying out. He said there was fraud in the election that he won.
But he never said that again after he won. He said it all the way leading up to the results coming in.
No. He has said since
still
then.
Saying.
He has said subsequent, as president, he said that there were millions.
Oh, that's right.
He lost the popular vote.
That's
he
right.
I won the popular vote because millions of fraudulent ballots.
Right.
Zero evidence of that. It has never happened in the history of this country. It is unlikely to ever happen unless someone hacks the voting system, which, as we know, the Russians did to multiple counties in 2016.
In Florida. Hello. Florida. Right. Exactly. No, I had forgotten about that. He didn't. Of course, he didn't lose the popular vote. Hillary Clinton's 3 million vote in excess. Those were all illegals. Illegals voting. Ugh. So this scares me. And this is no logic at all. But here, 2020, fucked up year. 2000, fucked up year. 1980. Fucked up year. Ronald Reagan, that was my first election, was 1980. Of course, I voted for Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan won. 2000, I voted for Al Gore. George W. Bush stole the election. Now it's 2020. This has been a year off the rails. I call it the Peter year. It's like the Peter principle. Anything that can go wrong is going wrong. It is the year of Peter. And I'm scared shitless. Because I don't have faith in the Democrats that they're gonna stand up. Now, I see that Joe Biden's got 4,000 attorneys at this ready, waiting to fight. Do you have confidence?
Is that all?
Yeah, right.
Because what you have to remember is that, like, litigation may have to occur not in just every state where there's a challenge, but in every individual county where there is a challenge. So as I said, that's in Florida alone, that's 67 counties. So you need lawyers conceivably in circuit court in all 67 counties in the event that some kind of challenge or fuckery occurs. So that's why so many lawyers are necessary. Because not just like, oh, we're all going to be in the Florida Supreme Court in Tallahassee.
Right.
No. You got to be everywhere. So the real question is, here's the most hopeful thing for me, is that Florida is irrelevant. Yes.
Wouldn't that be? Well, you know,
it's happened.
Right.
Every 4 years, all we hear is all eyes are on Florida. It has happened in the past that Florida, you know, is not such a purple state anymore.
No.
I don't have a lot of faith that you know. Now, listen, the bottom line is that, I'm sorry, I believe Trump's going to win the state of Florida.
Do you?
I'm going to lose some money on that. I've got some bets out if he loses. But I also think it's irrelevant because, as we know, while no Republican has ever won the presidency without Florida since Calvin Coolidge in like 1924.
Right. The Democrat has plenty of roads to 270 without Florida.
The Democrats don't need it. So what I'm hoping is that Florida fucks it up early and then we can just move on from Florida. Meaning like Florida is a non-issue in the election. If in the event Trump wins it, it doesn't matter in terms of Biden's. Now the question or the problem and the lesson of 537 votes is how many Floridas circa 2000 will there be across the country? Meaning how many Brooks Brothers riots might there be or how many whatever it is, how many other swing states will it be so close that they can cause these kinds of disruptions and even potentially steal an election? I think that's the greater concern. I'm hoping Florida will not be one of those states.
Right. No, I hope so too. But my wish is a little different than yours because I hear those words at the end of 537 votes. A close election can easily be stolen. I want a fucking landslide. I want to blow out. I want Florida to come in so fast, so early for Biden. And I'm not a Joe Biden fan, but I am so anti-Donald Trump that I would bend over backwards for Joe Biden. I would do anything to have him win. I want him to win Florida. I want it to be a landslide. I want there to be no way they can steal this one.
It would have to be a rout, obviously, yes, in order for there to be no issue. And that's not to say the Republicans aren't still going to try to make an issue of it. But what I'm hoping is, by the way, in your scenario, what I'm hoping is also is that either the election won't be close enough or the electoral votes in Florida won't be sufficient to turn the outcome, meaning that it's not worth challenging in Florida because either it was a rout for Biden or the election was, again, decided with the electoral votes in other in other states. I mean, that's really, I guess, when
I hear you.
Now, let me tell you about Joe Biden, though. I was an independent. I was an NPA for the first 20 years of my life. I have voted for Republicans. I have voted for third party candidates. Mm-hmm. I have voted for Democrats in all races. I mean, for president, for down ballot races. I think that the only thing worse than a two-party system is a one-party system.
Absolutely.
It's essentially what the Republicans have left us with. They have abdicated their role as a legitimate constitutional author. They're basically Vichy American traitors at this point is really what they are. They have failed to provide the checks and balances that we were lied to in school that were built into this system.
Exactly.
There is apparently nothing to stop any of this craziness. And so what I will say about Joe Biden is, and he's actually acknowledged this in not so many words in referring to himself as a transitional president. Joe Biden, because I get it. Elections for me, for as they are for most people, are we hold our nose and we vote for the best of the worst.
Exactly.
I get it. Joe Biden is the lemon sorbet course of American history.
I hear you.
We have been, como mierda, we have been eating shit for 4 years, and now we need to cleanse our palate. Because I will tell you, any of my friends who are third-party people or independents, whether you swing left or right and or too far in either direction, okay, what I will tell you is our goals will not be accomplished through authoritarianism or fascism, okay? If you're going to install a party or a president who is going to burn the system down, we are never going to get to where we want to get to, which is a truly independent system with ideas that really most Americans are passionate about, instead of being controlled by this completely failed two-party system. So that's what I can say. Like you said, Nicole, it's an easy choice this year.
Yes, exactly. And let's just hope enough people vote. Look, the turnout's amazing. It's just numbers we've never seen before. I have to believe there are people like me who say, we need a return to normalcy or some semblance of normalcy. This is not normal. Nothing about this is normal. We want our lives back, please. And by the way, it's my birthday on Wednesday. I want to wake up on November 4th. Right. I had Ronald Reagan elected on my 21st birthday, Barack Obama on my 49th, and Donald Trump on my 60th, or on my whatever it was 4 years ago. Tomorrow, on Wednesday, I turn 61. Please let it be Joe Biden. I'm so sick of this. I mean, having a birthday around Election Day is difficult as well.
I stopped counting at 35. Well, 30. I don't actually know how old I am.
Old. Age is just a concept. Don't worry about it. Sorry. Okay. Right. Billy Corbin, the film is 537 votes. It is showing now on HBO and HBO Max. Watch it and get active. Don't sit by. Vote. Thank you, Billy. It was great meeting you.
Thanks, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.